Good morning. It's November 8th, 6:47. Yikes. I need to be home by 7 o'clock. I don't think I'm going to make it. Anyway, I broke 50,000 yesterday. I knew I would. It was actually quite a near thing. There was a lot of stuff happening yesterday, and I never really got an opportunity to sit and work. One of the problems was I had so many errands to run yesterday, between the kids, grocery runs, therapist. It was a zoo all day. So I really didn't get the 3-hour, 4-hour window that I could work in yesterday. I was lucky to get almost 5,000 words out. If I had been against the deadline, I probably would have stayed up later last night and tried to string some more words together just to make it. But I broke through in the afternoon, and then I had to go deal with driving kids about. And I never did get back to it. I was planning on doing some work last night while I was taking my daughter to corral, and the time slipped up on me, and my netbook didn't have the right files on it. So I could have probably muddled along, but then I would have had to done a lot of patching and filling. I didn't even take my notebook, and that was a mistake. I should have at least taken my notebook. I could have been brainstorming ideas for book 2 for the month. So we'll see. We'll see how this works out. What I did was I went and relaxed and read and had a cup of coffee, and I didn't think about Tennis Fairport for about an hour and a half. So we'll see if that pays off today in my ability to crank out a few thousand words. Let's see what else. This is so all-consuming, and I know this is probably getting a little bit old, but this whole effort is so focused, it's so consuming. It's really all I think about all the time. It's what can I do next to free up time to write if I'm not writing. But periodically, I take little breaks through the day, and I do things like go and read my feed reader. I'll check in on Twitter and work real hard not to spend more than 15 or 20 minutes doing that, so that when I get back into the story, I don't have to rediscover where I was, which is the flow issue. Once I get the flow down, once I get in the mood, in the groove, the flow just happens. And time evaporates. It really does. I'll look up and it'll be 3 hours, 2 hours later. I haven't had any 3-hour blackouts yet, but 2 hours easily. And the problem is I have to be careful because I've got stuff that has to happen at specific parts in the day, specific times. So I have to go pick up kids. I have to drop off kids. I have to take kids to karate, or I have to, you know, do things that actually force me to interact with the wider world. Those things I can't let go. I have to try to keep track of all the time. So it's a bit schizophrenic. The idea that I can just focus on writing is a nice one. Someday perhaps I will. The days when everybody's home, of course, you'd think I'd have fewer things that I have to interact with, but the problem there is that I run into the interruptions from the family, who don't understand that it's Saturday, you're not supposed to work on Saturday, what are you doing? the comment on yesterday's show about YA and about what the next book should be are very interesting. Keep them coming. I'm happy to have this kind of discussion. The YA thing is an interesting one, in part because I know a lot of people label Quarter Share as YA. In reality, one of the issues that I have is that Ishmael is 18. He's a little old for YA. One of the hallmarks of a YA story is that it's written about a kid. And I don't really have a lot of insight that I can put into it. So, good morning. What I'd really like to do is to have my 13-year-old daughter start writing YA, because she has the insight into the experience, and it's immediate. It's part of who she is. And while I remember being 12 and 13, I remember working in the factory. I remember having to deal with parents who seemed totally unreasonable. I remember having to deal with adults who I'm still convinced were absolutely psychotic. They, you know, the people say one thing and they do something else. And for a kid, at least for me, that breakdown in logic was incomprehensible. I couldn't even imagine how those two ideas that I frequently saw adults exhibit could both be true at the same time in the same person. Now, even as a kid, I knew that some people thought one thing and some people thought another. But when one person thinks two things that don't exist together, or that I didn't think could exist together, that became a problem for me.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I was very curious, very, very difficult for me to deal with. The other part of that is that I'm not sure that I have a sufficiently universal experience in terms of childhood that I'd be able to actually write a story that a YA might be interested in reading. I do know that at finding stuff for people to read, for kids to read, for young adults, for teenagers to read, set in science fiction, is a bit problematic. Now, it always has been so. The number of writers who were writing YA has always been slim. Of course, a lot of mainstream from the 50s and even into the 60s was, by today's standards, pretty tame in terms of content, although their main characters and plots didn't necessarily involve the activities of kids. The one suggestion that came that I actually think is a little interesting, well, there are a lot of them that are interesting, but one that actually seems... Wow. This is what I get for waiting an extra 20 minutes, I guess. The plot that seems perhaps feasible, because I haven't really explored this part of this world before, is a fantasy featuring Robert Oakhurst when he goes through the decision to leave home and to join the King's Own. It's an opportunity to get a look into the King's Own and to see what that entity looks like from the inside. Now, Tanith hasn't really had a lot of opportunity to see things like how the country is run, the political background of Corlay, and how it operates. for the most part, she's been pretty much wandering alone in the wilderness. In this book, the sequel that I'm writing now, she actually has some interaction with some of the king's own and some of the king's administrators, and she's trying to move from the southern portion of the continent across the Great Bay and into the North Port area, into Longest Wood, into the northern territories. So one of the problems that I've got, of course, is that if I do that, then there's a lot of background work that I need to be doing, which is why I would have been really good if I had my notebook last night. Because I really haven't done a lot of work fleshing this out. Now, I have been to boot camp. I know what that's likely to have been like. I can probably deal with Robert as a young man working up to leaving home, his fateful decision to actually go, which could be interesting. But that's fantasy. And I think I don't remember now who it was who was bemoaning the lack of positive YA science fiction. But that actually, I actually took that idea to heart, and that's that, you know, there's not a lot out there. And what would it look like? And how would it be? What are the things? What are the actions? There were some interesting ideas in the threads, in the comment threads from yesterday. I really kind of like the idea of doing a growing up in the colonies one, or we haven't really seen a lot of kids on orbital stations, but they've got to be there, you'd think. Or maybe not. I mean, there are kids around, or there wouldn't be people, but that's an interesting idea. For example, if we went to one of the Confederation planets, like Serena. Is it Serena? Whatever the secondary planet was in the original Dunsany Roads sector. The one where he was going to be deported to. If we look at one of those planets and life in a Confederated planet situation, as opposed to the arbitrary and artificial life in a company-owned world, could be some interesting stuff that happens there. So how do you grow up to be something? What are the opportunities on those worlds? How do kids deal with the fact that there is a universe out there? Do they do what most kids here do and basically ignore the world, focusing instead on their little patch, their little bit of the territory that they can see? It's not until much later in life that they begin to realize that there are opportunities that exist beyond the sound of your voice, beyond the distance that you can throw a stick, outside the envelope of where you can go on public transit. There are other cultures, other ways of living that most parents don't acknowledge because they're too busy living their own lives and immersing the children in that life. I think about that right now in particular because of the dichotomy between the way that I grew up with several, and I mean this quite literally, several hundred relatives within a 100-mile radius. And the way my daughters are growing up, where their nearest relative outside the house is over 1,500 miles away. They're growing up in a world where they do have cousins, but they're cousins that I have never met. Myself. They're my sister's daughter's kids. The second cousins that I have never met. I finally met my first cousin's wife on the trip to Maine. I never met her before. She lives in North Carolina. I never met her. Seemed like a lovely lady. The Lowell legacy was in full force because with my brother and my cousin and I all sitting in the same room, it was difficult to tell us apart sometimes. We all look like my grandfather, which is causes no end of amusement and a certain amount of consternation around the family, particularly when there is someone who doesn't look like the grandfather. At any rate, so yeah, this whole idea of, you know, the way cultures evolve, we don't have here the extended family. And my sense is that it's not just my family that's operating this way, that this notion, the idea of the kid's table, if you know what the kid's table is, then you're probably of a certain age. You've either sat at the kid's table or had a kid's table. Very few people actually know about it secondhand, which is an interesting notion by itself. But the kid's table, and the graduation, the coming of age significance of being allowed to sit at the adult's table instead of the kid's table. It sounds almost feudalistic when you talk about it that way, you know, above the salt almost. But it's a certain sense it's true. Is that when you were allowed to sit with the big people in the family conclaves. Now, in a regular meal, of course, everyone would sit at the same table, but this idea that there are so many people that we can't all sit at the same table in a single house, that there has to be a second table set aside, even perhaps lower, more convenient for the kids to sit at, and in large part because there weren't enough big chairs. I mean, this is part of what growing up was for me. Interesting notions. There's some good ideas in here, I think. So maybe I will try it. I mean, I haven't got anything to lose. It's NaNoWriMo. If I get to the end of the month and I discover that there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. I just write it off. Maybe make a novella out of it, put it out and call it good. But, you people are making me think, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Anyway, I'm at the back gate. I gotta go get some writing done, because tomorrow is another day.